I invite you to open your Bibles to Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews chapter 11. Our memory verse for the month of August is with Jesus as a friend is our theme. So John 15 verse 13, if you don't mind saying this with me. Greater love has no one than this, than to lay down one's life for his friends. I appreciate that. About Wednesday, I go into Russ's office and begin to stand on a soapbox and talk for, I don't know, probably a lot longer than Russ wanted. But I was telling him what was on my mind. And I'm ate up with something right now. I can't get it off my mind. And so Russ's idea was, preach it this Sunday. And I said, no. So what I'm doing instead is preaching what I had planned on already and had planned for a few weeks. But what I'm going to tell you is I'm ate up with this right now. And I'm going to drop some nuggets in here and there over the next few months. And I'm going to preach an entire lesson on it to Russ's disgust in 2 months on October 31st. But I'm ate up with this. I can't get it off my mind. I can't shake it right now. Some of the stuff we talked about in class this morning and some of the study of Revelation over the last few weeks and some of the study of the times today, it's consuming me. And so I'll drop some information here and there, and then I'll plan on preaching an entire lesson on it here coming up. So don't be surprised if I smile at you awkwardly, like right now, and I make some comment here and there about evangelism. I don't think the statement that we are living in uncertain times, I don't think that's an understatement. In fact, there's just so much absolute chaos. And it seems like in every area right now, there's political chaos, there's local chaos, there's economic chaos. Society is being upheaved right now. There's all this mess with Afghanistan right now. There's all of the morality, and I don't think I should say decline of morality. I think morality's dead, and there's just a small remnant of life that remains. And all of this comes as no surprise to us. We see it. We're aware of it, whereas most of the world sometimes is not. And I have heard this statement from more parents and even grandparents than I could relate to you, that I'm scared watching my kids grow up in this world. Or I'm scared watching my grandkids grow up in this world. But one thing I want you to consider, there has always been uncertainty. When you look at the pandemic over the last 2 years, we're not the first people to face that. When you look at the political chaos, we're not the first people to face a government with a crazy political system and people lying and cheating and abusing the system. We're not the first people to see these things. The world's broken, folks. And I think that we as God's people and as people of the book and people who understand how history truly repeats itself should understand that better than most. Hebrews chapter 11 starts off with one of the most iconic chapters in the entire Bible. Hebrews 11 verse 1. Now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. For by it the elders obtained a good testimony. By faith we understand that the worlds were framed by the word of God, so that the things which are seen were not made of things which are visible. That right there sets this chapter up to be extremely rich and powerful. Most every one of us, if we are Bible-believing people and know the book rather well, we pick out individuals throughout Bible history and say, that person is my hero. You pick out any one of them, and I will tell you something. They lived in chaotic times. They lived in uncertain times. Abraham and Sarah, well, they're my heroes. Abraham and Sarah lived in Ur of the Chaldeans, a land given over to complete and total idolatry, and left that land. And I'll say a whole lot more on that in a second. Well, maybe David. David is my hero. Yeah, he was a prosperous king too. He also ran for his life for 6 to 10 years from a man who was like a second father to him earlier. And he was best friends with his son. Oh, that was just early in life. Yeah. And then during the prosperous expansion of the kingdom, he dealt with the rebellious son that tried to kill him. Or what about Barak or Gideon or Samson or Jephthah? Any one of these guys. Man, they're my hero for this reason or that. And they all lived during the judges' cycles. Were Israel, the people of God who should have known what God asked of them, had this awful repetition of going back into sin and then being oppressed and then crying out to God and God sending a deliverer, a judge, to save them. Folks, we're not the first people to live in chaotic time, but you know something that all these heroes of faith have in common? They thought. They fought. We don't get to be pacifists. And we're not raising pacifists. We're warriors, folks. And we're trying to help influence the next generation, whether it's our own children or our grandchildren. We're trying to help influence them to be warriors. Because it's a fight. And the soul is hanging in the balance. And we've got to do everything we can to fight this war. We're not preparing, listen to me very carefully, we're not preparing our children and our grandchildren for a college scholarship. And we're not preparing them to go and get a good job. And we're not even preparing them for marriage in and of itself. We're raising warriors. And we must fight too. A few simple observations from this chapter of what these heroes fought. And then the lesson will be yours. I want us to begin. Notice Abel and Abraham. I want you to see verse 4. By faith, Abel offered to God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain, by which he obtained witness that he was righteous, God testifying to his gifts, and by it he, being dead, still speaks. Come down to verse 17. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promises offered up his only begotten son, in whom it was said, "In Isaac your seed shall be called," accounting that God was able to raise him up even from the dead, from which he also received him in a figurative sense. I want you to think about what they offered to God. Both of these men offered sacrifices to God. At the root of sacrificing something to God, you've got to take care of a selfish problem you have. Because you're giving up something that you have for something you want more. Oftentimes, folks, when you're making a sacrifice to God, you're giving up something that you can see and touch and feel and smell for something very often that you cannot. What things are you holding away from God? What things are you trying to hide from Him? What things are you keeping back to yourself and being unwilling to give to God? The greatest thing I see is time. Time, I think, is the one subject we are most selfish with. Generally speaking, as Americans, we don't have a problem with money. We'll throw money at every problem. We don't worry. Now, sometimes we get a little stingy. That's something we may wrestle with. But generally speaking, money's not where we have the problem. It's our time. I will throw more money at something if it means I don't have to spend as much time doing it. Is that the area we're being selfish with? What about your family? Are you unwilling to give your family in service to God? I'm going to tell you something, folks. As a father, I don't know of a more horrific idea than Hebrews 11, 17 and following. Where Abraham was told by God, go and offer up your son to me on an altar. And Abraham does not try to rationalize his way out of it. He doesn't try to overthink it. He simply goes and does it. Let me tell you something, folks. There's a whole lot of things out there that are right to do, and if you sit there and think through them long enough, you'll figure out a way that works to you to get out of doing it. Selfishness is a problem. Is it something that we're fighting with, or is it something we're indulging? The things that we refuse to offer to God, we inevitably end up offering to this world. Your time? You're unwilling to give up your time for Bible class or worship? Looky, looky. You've got time to do other things. You're unwilling to invest yourself in Bible study? You got time to invest yourself in that Netflix series. What you refuse to give to God inevitably ends up going to the world. And let me say very pointedly, the same is true with your children. You don't sacrifice them to God, then you kill them on the altars of education. You kill them on the altars of sports. You kill them on the altars of popularity. You kill them on the altar of prosperity. And then you look around and wonder why they don't serve God. Abraham and Abel, folks, they were counted worthy by God because they fought. And they fought selfishness. A second consideration from this chapter. Noah, in verse 7, he fought hard choices. I want you to see this. Noah, in verse 7. By faith, Noah, being warned by God of things not yet seen, moved with fear, prepared an ark for the saving of his household, by which he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness which is according to faith. I hope you appreciate the hard choice Noah fought with. Now, we know that Noah was called in other places a preacher of righteousness. God warned Noah of things to come, and Noah, in turn, tried to warn others of things to come. You ever stopped and thought about how big the ark was? That was not something that Noah worked on in his garage, folks. Okay? He didn't move out the Toyota and park the ark in there and just go to hammering and lugging away. This thing is an eye catcher. This thing is something people see. It's something people notice. You ever think about what people must have thought of him? You ever think that entered his mind? Oh, 120 years. Year 115. I'm promising you, he's getting dirty things said about him. That's crazy Noah and his lunatic family talking about rain and building an ark. You know the pattern in Genesis 6, though? When God called Noah, God commanded Noah, and the pattern throughout Genesis 6 is, and thus Noah did. In fact, at the very end of that section, it says, and thus Noah did according to all the words of which God told him. Thus he did. You know how many hard choices Noah fought every day? You know how much that was on his, must have been on his mind. Every time he drove another nail, every time he would pick up another log and shape it to the form where he needed it to go. How many times his kids griped about having to do it again the next day? Why are we doing this, Dad? I'm getting sick and tired of this, Dad. Why do we have to sit still? Why do we have to pay attention while all the other churches get to do things their own way? We get to have dance parties and movie nights. You know how hard it must have been? I'm not saying Noah had a church that he was trying to fight with and his kids, but I hope you'll see the parallel there. You know how hard it must have been for Noah to just simply do what was right? I had something I thought about the other day with Noah. When God tells him to build the ark, he says, use gopher wood. You know where Noah built the ark? I wonder how many times he walked past another tree that would have been just fine on its size, on its shape, good straight, big log to make something out of. How many times he must have walked past a tree like that to go and get gopher wood? You ever thought about that? You ever thought about how many times he had to bring and drag another log past this great, beautiful pine tree? In fact, it's even in the way. I could cut this thing down, use it to build the ark too, and then it wouldn't be my way anymore. You ever thought about some of the hard choices? Every day, folks, 120 years. But by faith, Noah built the ark to the saving of his household. Faith demands true and complete allegiance to all that God has asked. Biblical faith, listen to me very carefully, biblical faith does not allow shortcuts. They're simply what God has asked of us, and therefore what we must do. And God will expect nothing less. What things are you avoiding? What hard choices are you ignoring right now? What things in your life need to be cut out and rebuilt? You may need an evaluation of your life. What things truly take priority? Am I the kind of person that's going to truly try to do all that God has commanded of me? Or am I going to just do the bare necessities? Well, the bare necessities don't cut it, even though it's a catchy song in the Jungle Book. What's your third consideration? Abraham, he fought comfort. Jump down to verse 8. Hebrews 11, verse 8. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out into the place which he would afterward receive as an inheritance. And he went out. Notice this now. Don't skip over this. And he went out, not knowing where he was going. By faith he sojourned in the land of promise, as in a foreign country, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. For he waited for the city which had foundations, whose builder and maker is God. By faith Abraham acted. You ever thought about what he left? Folks, when he left Ur of the Chaldeans, it wasn't just about leaving this nomadic herdsman here to go to a different nomadic herds group. He was leaving idolatrous Ur. He was basically claiming his true allegiance to Yahweh, Jehovah God, the God of promises. That's where Genesis 12 begins, folks. This wasn't just about geography. It was about complete allegiance to God. You know how uncomfortable that must have made Abraham? To leave family, to leave home, to leave all that he had known, and as it says, go somewhere that he didn't even know about yet. Does that idea make you uncomfortable? And yet, Abraham fought. Leaving this place that he had known to go and follow after God. There are a lot of unknowns when we follow Christ. I sometimes think about where I am today as a Christian versus where I was when I obeyed the gospel at 11 years old. I'll tell you right now, I never ever dreamed that becoming a Christian and serving God would mean I'd give up a saddle. That I'd leave Southeast Oklahoma. I promise you. In fact, my brother and I talk about this almost weekly. He owns land. And he's got a house he's fixing to build. And I told him the other day, I never would have dreamed that you would own like 40 acres or whatever it is. And I don't even have a horse. Never would have dreamed that. I'm going to tell you something, folks. When you commit to serving Christ, when you choose to be raised to walk in newness of life, that means things change. And that means there's a new pattern of growth that should come. That means you want different things in life. I'm afraid far too often, folks, we don't understand that concept very well. We understand baptism for the remission of sins, but we just don't get the newness of life factor. Things have got to change. Well, the baptism doesn't help you. It's uncomfortable leaving. It's uncomfortable going somewhere where you don't know where you're going. But I think far too long, folks, we as American Christians have been comfortable. And I'm thankful for what we have. But do you think that level of comfort we get to enjoy has helped make more devoted disciples? Or do you think that it has helped make more apathetic people who claim to be disciples? Our comfort's killing us, folks. You look around us in the world today, and our comfort is killing us. But Abraham fought it. Moses fought with pleasure. I want you to jump down to verse 24. Hebrews 11 and verse 24. By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hidden 3 months by his parents because they saw he was a beautiful child, and they were not afraid of the king's command. By faith, Moses, when he had come of age, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he looked to the reward. I don't know if we always think about the level of pleasure that Moses enjoyed in Egypt. Right there in the passage, he says he refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, grandson to Pharaoh. Grandson to Pharaoh. Didn't even want to be identified as that. You know, at this time in world history, Egypt would have been one of the mega superpowers of the world. And this is at one of their greatest and most prosperous dynasties of the Egyptian Empire. Here stands Moses as, what, top five, top ten most powerful men in Egypt at the time? That would have made him one of the most powerful humans in the world when he lived there. But he left that. He left that to follow God. Could you have done that? Power, pleasure, influence, the things that seem to draw us in. Could you have left all that to follow after God? Notice how it says that. He refused that position. Notice verse 25, choosing, no, he wasn't choosing just another level of pleasure and fun. No, he choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin. He chose to suffer. He left that position to go and suffer with God's people because he understood the riches that Christ offered were greater than that in Egypt. And he looked to the reward that God had provided. What pleasures are we not giving up? What pleasures are we unwilling to offer? What pleasures seem to have our attention the most? By faith, Moses set aside the temporal riches. Are we struggling with that today? Do you not think in maybe some ways this is why the world is in such chaos? Because of the love of money? Because of the love of pleasures? And how those two things seem to go so well together? Moses fought against it. One thing about Moses has always impressed me, among about, I guess, 100 things, but I'll give you one. Moses understood not just that his loyalty was truly to Yahweh, Jehovah God, but no matter what the royalty offered him in Egypt, he was a child of the true king. Do we appreciate that? I know little girls grow up wanting to be princesses. Women, you're daughters of the king. You're royalty. Typically, boys don't grow up wanting to be princes. I don't know. Maybe other boys did. I didn't grow up wanting to be a prince. But we're sons of the king, folks. We're royalty. We get to enjoy that blessing through Christ. But only if we will ignore the passing pleasures of sin. Only if we'll fight against it and not give in to it. Moses understood that his faith must drive him to follow God. Biblical faith demands you forsake something. It demands that you forsake this world. It demands that you forsake your time in this world. It demands that you forsake your interests in this world. And if you are unwilling to do that, you forsake God. Biblical faith drives us to do. Moses fought with pleasure. Moses also fought fear. I want you to notice this in verse 27. And by the way, his mom and dad did the same thing. If you notice in verse 23, they chose to not be afraid of the king's command. See that? Now jump down to verse 27. By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. Think about that. Fear was not going to dominate him. His fear of Egypt, his fear of Pharaoh was not what was going to drive him to do something. His fear of failing God. Are we there? Are we determined to be fearlessly faithful to the Lord? I know right now there's a lot of people afraid. They're afraid of the economy. They're afraid of the politics. They're afraid of this Afghanistan mess. They're afraid of the pandemic. And it's driving some people into the holes. Holes in the ground. What's it doing to us? What's it doing to you? Now, I'm all for being respectful. I'm all for being cautious. But being afraid? I don't blot my tears when I walk out of the house, folks. You know how scary it must have been to lead people away from your home, away from Pharaoh, away from the place you had once lived, and then knowing they were coming after you when Pharaoh changed his mind. But his fear of the king of Pharaoh, or fear of the king of Egypt, was not going to dominate him. He was going to serve God. I hope you'll appreciate, in Matthew chapter 10, Jesus makes the statement to the disciples as they're about to go out on the limited commission. And he says, "Do not fear those who can kill your body. Rather fear him who can cast both body and soul into hell." You know, that's a principle that goes beyond just the limited commission, folks. When we serve the conqueror of worlds, when we serve the Redeemer, when we serve the Lord, when we serve the Alpha and the Omega, when we serve Yahweh, the true and living God, when we serve Him, what are we afraid of in this world? I said I wasn't going to leave Hebrews 11, but we're doing it. Romans 8. Romans the 8th chapter. In Romans the 8th chapter, he starts in verse 31 by saying some pretty powerful concepts, but we're going to jump right in the middle of the section, down in verse 35. Who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Think about this now, folks. Shall tribulation, distress, persecution, famine, nakedness, or peril, or the sword? Think about that. As it is written, "For your sake we are killed all day long, we are accounted as sheep for the slaughter. Yet in all these things we are more than conquerors through Him who loved us. For I am persuaded that neither death nor life, nor angels, nor principalities, nor powers, nor things present, nor things to come, nor height, nor depth, nor any other created thing shall be able to separate us from the love of God which is in Christ Jesus our Lord." You think about some of the things he's mentioned there in that section. Why are we afraid of the economy? Now, I'm not saying he's going to heal the economy. What I'm saying is you're living beyond this world. Our treasures are in heaven. Why are we afraid of the government? Why are we afraid of this persecution? Why are we afraid of potential wars and outbreaks and terrorism? Be respectful, sure, yes. Be mindful and cautious, absolutely. But none of those things can separate us from the love of Christ. And I'll throw in too, neither can COVID. Be respectful and be kind and be patient. Russ made some great observations about that. I think it was Wednesday night, right before we wrapped up. Folks, there's a lot of people that are terrified right now. And I'm going to tell you something. A lot of the world should be. Not because of COVID. Not because of Afghanistan. But because their soul is not right with God. But let's not let that be said of us. Now again, I'm not advocating that you go around kissing all the strangers in public and shaking hands and licking doorknobs. I'm not advocating anything like that. But what I am advocating, live with the hope that we sing about every Sunday. Live with the attitude that says, I'm not going to be afraid because God is real and I serve Him. Moses fought with fear. But let me wrap up with this. Let me tell you what they all fought. They all fought sin. This is one of my favorite sections in this chapter. I want you to look down at verse 30. This is Hebrews 11 now. Back in Hebrews 11. And verse 30 through the end of the chapter. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell down after they were encircled for 7 days. By faith, the harlot Rahab did not perish with those who did not believe when she had received the spies with peace. What more shall I say? For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon and Barak and Samson and Jephthah, also of David and Samuel and the prophets, who through faith subdued kingdoms, worked righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, became valiant in battle, turned to fight the armies of the aliens. Women received their dead raised to life again, and others were tortured, not accepting deliverance, that they might obtain a better resurrection. Others had trial of mockings and scourgings, yes, and of chains and imprisonments. They were stoned, sawn into, were tempted, were slain with the sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented, of whom the world was not worthy. They wandered in deserts and mountains, in dens and caves of the earth. And all these, having obtained a good testimony through faith, did not receive the promise. God, having provided something better for us, that they should not be made perfect apart from us. You know what they all fought? I should have probably waited to put that on PowerPoint, but I did it already. Sin. God asked the people, when they went into Israel, when they went into the promised land, don't compromise with it. Don't indulge it. Drive out the sinful inhabitants. That's why they circled the walls of Jericho, folks. Was to dominate the city. Was to drive out its inhabitants. And they were successful. Now this ultimately led to their undoing. The fact that they didn't drive out all the inhabitants. I know it's scary out there, folks. But we've got to fight. We've got to fight sin. And we've got to fight apathy towards sin. And we've got to fight this complacent mentality that has just taken over in congregations. Because there's war. I read a quote this past week. A man turns to his wife and he says, "Hun," I don't think he was Southern, but "hun" seems to work best. "Hun, I'm sorry that we have to raise our children in these dystopian times." The wife turns to the husband and says, "Don't apologize for raising dragon slayers in a time where dragons exist." Folks, we're not raising these pathetic little pacifists that can just claim to believe in God but not do anything about it. We're trying to raise warriors who fight. You look at all the heroes, the judges that are mentioned there. They all fought. They fought armies. They fought wars. They fought sin. They fought the inhabitants. Rahab fought the sins of the past that kept coming back. And that's what ultimately led to the nation being lost, was because they kept allowing the nation to bring in, other nations to bring in sin and bring in idolatry. Folks, if we won't take sin serious, it'll kill you. We've got to kill it before it kills us. And if we won't take it serious, if we won't try to deal with sin in our lives in a serious way, we'll end up being Samson, with our eyes gouged out in the temple of a false god. Sin's out to get you, folks. Sin is the dragon. It's here to kill you. It's here to stay. It's here to tear your life apart and here to ruin your family's life. Now, what are you doing about it? Or are you just letting it win? We don't have a society problem. We don't have a political problem. We don't have a health problem. We don't have a morality problem. We have a God problem. And sin is just the symptom. This sexuality crisis and morality crisis and marriage crisis and any other crisis you want to bring in, it's all just symptoms, folks. Remember where we started? Hebrews 11, verse 1. Now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. For by it the elders obtained a good testimony. Listen very carefully. By faith we understand that the worlds were framed by the Word of God, so that the things which are seen were not made of things which are visible. You appreciate that's where it starts. The simple, basic understanding that we came from God. I know we are living in uncertain times. I know it's not what it once was. That's okay. We live in a broken world, folks. It will never be unbroken. There's always going to be chaos. There's always going to be pandemics. There's always going to be wars. There's always going to be sin. And here we are caught in the middle of this conflict. Here we are, far too often wanting to toe both sides of the issue. When what we need to be doing is fighting. We're warriors. We're raising warriors. And we cannot stand for one second to lay down arms. To him who overcomes, Revelation 2 and 3, the promise over and over again. To him who conquers, all the promises of God await. It may be that someone here this morning has quit fighting. We want to help you. We want to get you back in the war, get you back on your feet, put the sword in your hand and go to work with you. And it may be that you've never fought. Well, we want to help you too. If you're subject to the invitation this morning, we would invite you to come forward now as we stand and as we sing.